Okay, welcome back to this presentation from our series regarding the prayer. As we already learned in the previous lessons, we probably noticed that prayer, it's basically a simple action. I mean, you just send some words to someone who is invisible, but anyway, as we are going and dive deeper in the Bible, we can discover that prayer is not quite an easy task. Not just because you should have and you must be consistent and stay focused on those moments, but there is an approach, there is an attitude that you should have when you are going to perform the prayer. Now, as you know, every time we have a special guest, which is a biblical one, and today is Elijah's turn. And I'm wondering what Elijah might teach us about prayer. Now, from the beginning, I must say that Elijah is very highly regarded in Judaism, even today. Basically, there are two most important characters in Judaism today, and they were all the time, actually, Moses and Elijah. Now, we can easily understand why Moses was given such a status, an elevated status. Because, by the way, you know, Moses was seen and perceived as a founder of the nation, right? He was the one who delivered them, gave them a law, a status, a territory, an idea, actually. But we know that it was God behind all this, right? It wasn't Moses, even though he played a major role in all these mighty things. But, you know, people easily forget who is the true source of all the good. Anyway, Moses could be, I'd say, legitimately considered as a founder and, you know, the spiritual leader of the Jews from all time. But what about Elijah then? Why he shares the same amount of sympathy, respect, authority, and even hope? Right? Why? What Elijah did give them, actually, except that mighty demonstration of Mount Carmel, when he bring down the fire. Otherwise, why are they so excited about them? About him, sorry. Why the Jewish people are so excited about him? And I would say, this is my guess, that for the Jews, Elijah represents a longing for a type of Messiah they never had. They never had. And this is why when John the Baptist started his ministry, he was asked, "Who are you? Are you the prophet?" Who was the prophet? Moses. Any time when they say the prophet with capital P, let's say, it was Moses. So, are you the prophet? No. Are you? What's the next in line? Yeah. On the throne?
Yeah. Yeah.
Elijah. Are you Elijah? No. And then who you are? There is no other option. Or a Moses or Elijah. Then who you are? You know? And this is why they regard Elijah as a type of Messiah they never had, because Elijah did mighty works for them, and he was regarded as someone who could enhance further actions for Jewish people. Anyway, ritually speaking, we can say that he is still present with the Jewish people up to these days, ritual speaking. Because he has, in the circumcision ritual, they have a specific chair, and that chair is considered Elijah's chair. While invisibly, he is looking at every ritual of circumcision. And he is standing on that chair, testifying about the covenant. This is the idea. And on the Passover meal, they have the chair and they have the cup of Elijah. It's very interesting. And there is another thing about Elijah, because they the closing hymn at the ceremony that concludes the Sabbath, they said something like this: Elijah the prophet, Elijah the Tishbe, let him come quickly in our day with the Messiah, the son of David. So actually they look upon Elijah that someone that could usher as a Messiah in among them. Now, probably if Elijah would have come in the first century, as he did back, probably they would pick him as the Messiah. I mean, Elijah wouldn't be keen to go in that area, but anyway, they would have picked him as their Messiah. However, in the scriptures, we find a different picture of Elijah. It's a different picture. It is true, he never saw death, because he was, transferred during being alive, He did mighty works for his people. We know that the demonstration on Mount Carmel. But in the end, Elijah was just like us. And this wonderful text from James 5, verse 17. Elijah was a man subject to like passions as we are. So, no elevated position for Elijah. I mean, we know that the devil is very objective in this matter. And everyone is scanned precisely and said, you are David, but you have this problem. You are Moses, but you are, you did something wrong. And he's mentioned. And if we believe that if Moses was the one who wrote down the Genesis and then Exodus and so on, Moses write down that he was a killer someday in the past. He was. He didn't opt out this information for looking good, He didn't cook the books, as we say in He was sincere. He said, yes, I was, but I am no longer such a person. So this is Bible, This is the vision. And it's very important to understand this. Because Elijah now is very elevated by Jewish people, but actually, Elijah was a man with passion just like us. There are many, insights that spring out from this verse, but this is not actually our topic. However, Elijah did pray earnestly, and this is why he was such powerful had such a powerful ministry. Now, because of his total commitment to God, he used Elijah in a spectacular manner. And Elijah was so intrinsically connected with God, with God's will and God's plan, that he could speak like that in 1 Kings 17, verse 1. Now Elijah said to Ahab, as the Lord, the God of Israel, lives before whom I stand, there shall be neither dew or rain these years except by my word. Sounds a little bit it's a bold statement. Man, who are you to say that my word is the one who gave the give the permission that rain came down? But this is what I am saying. Elijah was very close to God, linked with his plans, his will, and he could say honestly, not boasting himself, that the rain will come when I say so. Because I'm not speaking in my behalf, in my name, I am speaking in God's name. So I will not go wrong in this particular area, because I know his will and he will do it. Now, Elijah spoke with authority, that's for sure. But that authority was delegated from God. Elijah's words, his words, as powerless as our words are, you know? I mean, there were no power in Elijah's words. And they were as powerless as our words are regarding the rain problem or any other issue. We cannot say now, we notice that in that country there's a rain problem. I will pray for that country and the rain will come down. It's not possible to do it. I mean, you can do it, but can you expect that rain will come down or the rain stop because it's flooding the area? It's a tricky problem, right? But this is the idea. Our words are powerless. We cannot do this. But if God has this intention, he can do it. And if he's choosing us for such a task, well, we can speak in his name. His word, but not our word, not in our name. Now, the first lesson about the prayer from this example is that we need God's word in order to proceed forward. We cannot move by our impressions. You know, I have a feeling and I'm going. No, you need something much stable, which is God's word. And this is why Elijah succeeded in his ministry, because he didn't go to Ahab to tell him, you know what, I don't like the way you are leading the people. I don't like the idolatry and all the problem that you caused by your evil wife. And for this reason, I forbid from now on that rain will come again here. He would be, we say, shot on sight for doing such a statement, right? But when you're going with God's authority, you can say those things. But only when God delegates you to do this, not otherwise. Now, precisely, what can Elijah could teach us about prayer? Jacob, in that text, in chapter 5, Jacob speaks about two prayers. The first prayer, both prayers are about rain, both. The first one, that the rain will stop to come. And the second prayer was that the rain will come again. Between these two prayers, there were a drought of 42 months. Do you have a picture? It was the first prayer. Now, from now on, the rain will not come. Then we take 42 months, no rain at all. And after that, he concludes this period with another prayer, the second one, when the rain finally reach there. Now, let's speak about the first prayer, which is recorded as an idea. It's recorded in First Kings and by Jacob in chapter 5. We don't have recorded this prayer, the first one. Only that he said, no rain will come again, not until my, after my words. You know that text. Now, but we can presume that was very quick and short, and the answer was immediate. Indeed, the rain started to come. Now, Elijah didn't need to be persistent in this prayer because he knew exactly that it was God's will, right? So, he was quite confident in this prayer, in this attitude, because he prayed according to that will. And he was confident as well that the answer is not a probability, but a certainty. You know the text from 1 John, chapter 5, verse 14 and 15. This is the confidence we have in approaching God, that if we ask anything according to His will, He hears us. And if we know that He hears us, whatever we ask, we know that we have what we ask of Him. Now, let me ask you this. Can we apply this promise whatsoever? Doesn't matter in which area, which topic of prayer. What do you think? Because there's a very powerful promise here, right? If we know His will and we pray according to that will, we are confident and we are sure that we already have what we have asked for. Now, this is what we think about this. In our topics, in our problems, can we move forward according to this prayer? Actually, we should do. But our problem is this. We don't know what His will is. And if we are taking some very sensitive problems, like someone who is ill, or myself, and I'm not speaking of a cold or a flu or, you know, which is passing. Something much more dramatic. I can say, wow, I am confident 100% that this is God's will to be healed, and I don't going into despair and to be anxious, because I know for sure that I will be healed according to this promise. But honestly, I never met someone who said to me, I am 100% sure that this is His will. Only guess, you know, but not sure. And I would not blame such a reaction, because honestly, we don't know precisely what His will is. So, regarding some problems. Well, everything which is related to the spiritual realm, well, it is very clear. Now, we know that His will is that we should be obedient, be pious, be happy, and meek, and, you know, all the good stuff from the Bible, right? But when we switch from the spiritual to material, then we have a problem. Is that so? I am alone in this observation? Or this is a regular perception? And maybe we should figure out why in the material realm sometimes doesn't apply the same laws and the spiritual one. Because you may notice that in your life when you pray for something which is related with your spiritual growth and moral position, you have prayer answered. Right? To get the power to forgive someone. And you know that he doesn't deserve your forgiveness. Thank you. But after you prayed, you did feel that now I can go and say, forgive me, my brother, my sister, and so on. What was that? I am 100% sure that was God's intervention in your mind to give you the openness and kindness to lower yourself and take the initiative. But if I'm trying to buy a house, what about? I can pray confidently that I will get the deposit money out of blue or an unrelated aunt from I don't know which country. She just passed away and leaving me at least 1.2 million. Doesn't apply, you know. This is the movies. This is not movies, not the reality. But anyway, this is like an ongoing quest for every one of us to find out how to apply these promises in which areas that we may be confident, as Elijah was and John was. Now, if we take, you know, his prayer on the Mount Carmel, which is a very short one, very precise, you know, I would say that Elijah, he knew precisely what he was about in that prayer. I mean, what he was looking for when he prayed. And this is a very important idea. Do we know for what we are praying for? Because the quick answer is, yes, we know. But if you are going to go deep inside you, in your mind, sometimes you'll find that you don't know what you are praying for. Just you know that you should pray, because it's a good exercise, spiritual exercise. And to keep this connection with God. But otherwise, do we have a precise goal when we are praying or not? And I'm not speaking here about the general prayer, you know, for the health of our family, our friends, our neighbors, our queen and all the good people in this world, or to have a good day in our job and our office and whatever, and to be protected by reckless driving and, you know, all the stuff. I mean precise prayers, not like going to a GP, which is the general practitioner, right? This is the idea. And he doesn't have any idea what you are going through. But he have this very good solution to a very good exit. He will give you a paracetamol, you know, these very safe pills for everything you might have. And something is going wrong, then and only then he will refer you to a specialist. With that one is supposed to know precisely what you are going through and to give you the correct medicine or treatment. Do you see the difference, right? The GP is like a melting pot, you know, put their carrots and apples and everything is on there, you know. And you choose and pick, you know, you can take it a little bit, no? But a specialist is someone who is precisely looking and saying, no, I know what you have. So, do we know, as Jesus said, how to knock, how to look, and how to ask when we are praying, or just randomly? You know that there's a difference between a random prayer and a specific prayer? Let's make this quick test. How many of you are using Asda as the main supplier for your groceries? How many of you? Not much. Tesco. Oh, there are some of you. And the rest of you? Sainsbury? And those okay. Now, I will give you this one because I have the same problem. Tesco and Asda. I have Asda almost 1 mile from where I'm living. So, I've been to Asda many times. I know every aisle, you know. Sometimes they change it. I don't know why it's the reason, because they confuse me. But usually, I know where are the every product I'm looking for. When I'm going to Tesco, I'm lost. I don't know where to find the same item. Because I'm not, you know, used to shopping at Tesco. So this is the difference. In going to Asda, you know, precisely I'm going there, and the shopping is like a 30 minutes experience. In Tesco, it'd be 2 hours. I'm lost now in the clothes area, or in the, I don't know, fizzy drinks aisle, and so on. Where are the eggs? I don't know, go back 2 miles to Asda to find the eggs. You know, this is the problem. When they are praying randomly, you are lost in many words, in many topics, in many issues. When you pray specifically, you have just one interest and go to that one. Nothing else. Now, the second prayer of Elijah is very interesting. While it is not recorded as a textual reading, this prayer, anyway, is mentioned as an action. Yes, we don't know the words that Elijah used for the second prayer. We don't know. But anyway, the prayer is recorded as an action. Elijah took action. And he prayed for how many times? Do you know Elijah, the second prayer of Elijah, to come down the rain again? How many times he prayed? 7 times. 7 times. He prayed for 7 times. And I'm wondering, because after that paramount moment of Mount Carmel, when the people recognized that God is the only Lord, and the curse was lifted, and Elijah knew that according to God's will, now the rain should come down any minute, right? And nothing happened. Nothing happened. More than that, Elijah told Ahab, he told him about the coming rain and to go and looking after some, safe area. He told Ahab about the rain without seeing it. And this is an act of faith, right? The rain will come, I know for sure. So go. That was an act of faith. Now, he did trust God for the answer. And Elijah started to pray, but the answer wasn't immediate, like previous prayers. And I'm wondering why so. Now, he knew God's will, right? Because he said, after 3.5 years, the rain will come again. And the people confessed their wrongdoings and they have repented. Even the king seemed open. Now, after the 3.5 years, seemed open. What went wrong then? Why Elijah needed to pray for 7 times? Was he short of faith now? doesn't have the same amount of faith that he had on Mount Carmel on 3 years before. Just earlier on the mount, right, the fire came down as a quick and precise prayer. Immediately. Now the rain, but it's not coming. What's the problem? How can we explain the persistence 7 times for bringing down the rain? Well, I think that Elijah now needed something different, a new approach. He was supposed to trust not his faith, which was quite remarkable, you know, but God. You know? And sometimes, if you have very powerful experiences with God, you are tempted to trust in your faith. I have the faith. I don't have a problem in this area. I just kneel and I say the prayer and everything will be fine. And you get confident in yourself, in your capacities, in your skills, in your time, in everything you bring in that action. And it is possible that Elijah started to trust his faith, his experience, more than God. And now he searched his heart, deep searching of the heart, until he gave up all factors and totally committed to God. I am trusting only you now. I know that I don't have the power to say, let the rain came down. I did say the fire and it did. I did say stop the rain and it did. But now I have come to the conclusion that I cannot do it because it is not about me. It's about you. And it did. It's very interesting that after this searching, inner searching, Elijah got the answer. But very interesting, he waited for something before the rain was supposed to come. He waited for something. What was he was looking for? Do you recall the experience? Because it was a servant involved in that matter, and he asked something, his servant. Yes, to looking after a sign. Interesting. To looking after a sign. And that small sign, actually, could have assured Elijah that he was back on tracks. I need this sign, you know. I need something that assures me that I am right on the right path. And that sign, that small clue, it was actually a little cloud, right? In the Bible, the cloud. It was enough for him. Just, he didn't need a big cloud, black cloud with the thunders and to believe. No, just a little cloud was enough for him to be 100% sure that God will fulfill his promise. And was enough for him to step forward now with a total faith. And we can say that Elijah knew how to interpret the signs. Which is now, this is another problem, another topic. And you need to have a clear mind not to emphasize the signs, but not to the other. Underestimate the role of them in our lives. Elijah knew how to interpret the sign. Now, the conclusion. We'd say that the conclusion is simple, it's obvious. First of all, we need to know, we should know, what is God's will. In everything. which is related to our life and person. And this is where the Bible comes and help us, because we can find in the Bible all the information, the principles that will help us to understand what is God's will in this particular problem. Second, we must do precise and clear requests motivated by God's promises. We have a lot of promises in the Bible. And when we are praying for something, we must do, or we should be precise. I need this thing. And not going in other information. I don't need to inform God about what's going on in this world. Actually. And I heard prayer that it was like a news. They informed God about Middle East problem and Iran and the United States that are brink of war. Some doesn't need God all this information. He already knows, right? So don't get lost in all these sides problems. We need focus to say precisely what the problem is. And this is a good exercise for ourselves, because we need to be more focused in our communication, you know, not going lost in the science issue and secondary problems. Now, this is the problem, this is the issue, not everything, but only this one. And thirdly, and lastly, we are supposed to persist in our prayer. If the response is not coming in the, you know, the appropriate time when we are expected to come, we should be persistent until we got a clue about God's answer. First of all, we might got a clue, not the answer itself, but a hint. And after we have that little hint, we can proceed forward with the total faith that in His good time, He will answer my problem. And be safe and relieved that my case now rests in God's hands, and now He will take care of it. So this is briefly what Elijah might teach us about prayer. Still, there are many lessons, I am sure about this. But for now, I believe that this simple lesson could help us to enhance our experience, our prayer experience, and may God bless all of us in this endeavor.